Mel.
Saeed.
Another episode of Two Writers Talking Shit.
Absolutely phenomenal.
I know.
I'm so excited to be here. How about you?
Me too. We're on a groove.
We're grooving.
We're grooving.
And grooving.
And grooving. You know? Yes, we are here. And we are here with one of my writer friends, Rod Johnson. What's up, man?
Hey.
Man.
Podcast universe, what's happening?
Side note, I gotta tell the story.
So,
Oh, we didn't even get started yet.
Nah, bro, we ain't letting you slide. So, for those out here don't know, Rod looks like Will Smith in what year? Like Bad Boys?
20 years ago.
Yeah, like
20 years okay. ago.
I'll shout out to
that's,
Will.
That's gracious of you both.
But I'm not done though. So we go out to eat. You know, I take Uber like I do.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't have a vehicle yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm getting one this summer, though.
Yeah.
Okay. We're hanging outside.
First comes the vehicle, then comes the wife.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
In that order.
Yeah.
We're working. I'm dating with intention. But Rob, we're standing outside, place in Beverly Hills or something.
Oh, yeah. Spago?
It was indeed Granville.
Granville. Right, Granville. I don't know. Listen, I'm new to LA. I mean, it said Beverly something.
You were here today. This but, did not happen today, but
so
Granville.
So Mel, we're outside.
Yeah. Mm.
Ross chilling.
Yeah.
And I guess I look like his security.
First of all, that's hilarious. Uber,
right.
Uber comes up. I get in the Uber. The Uber is like looking. His head is like all out the side, looking out the window. And I'm like, bro, I'm here. Hello.
Yeah.
My name's Saeed. Are you here to pick me up, sir?
Sir?
He's like, is that Will Smith? Like he didn't even ask, like, are you the correct person getting in this vehicle?
Yeah.
Like
he didn't care.
He's like, is that Will Smith? And I'm like, man, nah, man.
I maintained, say, you should have said, yeah.
You
should have been like, yeah, let's go.
I thought he, but you can't get a discount on a goddamn app, though.
Yeah.
I should have been like, man, give me a discount, man. I have him do your answering service. But, Rob, man, okay, so actor background.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about how you went from acting to screenwriting? Because the first thing Mel said when you came in here is you look like an actor.
Yeah. Well, I mean, side note, if you want to be an actor, it in fact does not pay to look like an already famous actor.
I thought people liked that. I genuinely thought that was like a bonus.
No. It's definitely not.
I'm here to tell you.
I swear, like, you guys are being gracious to the viewer, to the listeners out there. You guys cannot, in fact, see me, but I do recall at one point a casting agent referred to me as Walmart Will Smith.
Wow. How dare they?
Yeah. And then I was like, well, I guess I better learn how to write then, you know?
I love that.
No, that was not it. I'll tell you this. Walmart Will Smith, not bad. Okay.
Mm.
Not a bad comparison. I'll actually take that all day.
Yeah.
I'll take that all day. So I got started as an actor. That's one of the things that I came out to LA doing medical sales. That was like,
wait, what were you selling?
Like Ozempic? Major.
Yeah, exactly. Can we get a hook up on that?
This is pre-Ozempic days. I got no insight on that.
I would love a hookup on Ozempic.
If you know anyone. I do know some folks.
Yeah, okay. We'll talk after.
Yeah.
Save it for the people who need it, but go ahead.
So I came out here for medical sales. I was selling like capital equipment. So basically like X-ray machines.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah. Big mobile X-ray machines.
I've had an X-ray machine.
Yeah. Cardiac catheters.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah. Was doing that. And nobody that I ever worked with has ever heard this story. So
I doubt they're
listening. But I remember at the time, like I was doing sales, and my boss was like, "Hey, if you ever want to do like a public speaking class, you know, we'll pay for that."
Oh.
And I was like, "Oh, bet." You know what I mean? I'm living in LA, and I'm like, I bet you I bet you nobody's checking receipts. I could just walk into an acting studio and sign up, and my job will just pay for my acting class.
Oh, that's fire.
Yeah. So that's what I did.
What acting studio did you walk into?
Howard Fine Acting Studio. I mean, I checked out a couple, but Howard Fine Acting Studio in Hollywood. This was back when they were on La Brea. But yeah, went in there, did that. And fell in love. It was only a matter of time. I was at that job for like another 6-9 months, maybe a year. I forget. It was very long.
Mm-hmm.
But I caught the acting bug and was doing that from like pretty much exclusively for about 2 years, just taking classes, going on auditions, doing a little bit of improv, and fell in with a group of really strong actors. And we're like, you know, we need to make our own shit, like, you know, to put on our reels, and also just, you know, fun shit to put online. And we're like, but we gotta sort of, if we're gonna do this, we gotta like have a division of concerns, right? Some people are gonna act in it, some people are gonna direct it, some people are gonna, you know, somebody's gotta fucking write this shit. And nobody wanted to write. Nobody was like, you know, and so it just kept on falling to me. And so I'm like writing these really terrible fucking scenes. Like, I should resurrect some of these and send them your way.
Okay. Give us a sample.
Put them in the show notes.
What would the scenes be?
That's the thing, is that they weren't about anything. Okay. Like these were like episodes of fucking Seinfeld, just 30-second, like 2 minutes of Seinfeld of just people sitting on a couch, you know, talking about bullshit, right? Yeah. But it was like,
soup.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It was really just about like the snappy dialogue.
Yeah.
Like that was it. It was like, what can I write that's fun? But there was nothing to it. They just weren't good. Yeah. They were poorly written. And so that sent me down a rabbit hole. I'm like, I need to write better little skits. Mm-hmm. I need to find a way to make these interesting. Or better, not even interesting, just better. And so I started listening to another podcast.
Come on.
And it's called The Writer's Panel.
Oh.
It's been blacker.
Yeah. I started listening to The Writer's Panel. It was like 500 some episodes. And that was like my early writing education, because you got a lot of TV writers going on there talking about their process. That's one of the questions that he likes to ask a lot. You guys could steal that. Just kind of like what the writer process is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's giving us notes. How we could do our podcast
just
better.
Just like a writer.
Just like a writer.
Yeah. Oh, I got a whole bunch of notes, actually. I can run out to the car and, you know.
Like,
no. So I'm listening to this and on it, you know what I mean? Like he's given like this, like, they're not necessarily trying to teach you the act of screenwriting, but if you listen to enough episodes, 500 episodes,
you're going
to
learn something.
You start to learn a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized in that moment that my whole approach to writing was just ass backward. I was thinking about writing like an actor, right? Mm-hmm. And actors were taught, like, Mel, you know this, right? Like we're working our way like from the surface down, right? We're starting with the dialogue. We're just, you know, just kind of like rote memorizing it. And then we're kind of thinking, you know, what's sort of like the next level? Like, what's the want? What do I want in this scene?
Yeah.
You know, all right, what's the level beyond that? What's my overall motivation? Right. And then going to another step deeper, you're like, what's my theme?
Mm-hmm.
And I was writing that way. Like as well, like in the wrong order. I'm just starting with the snappy dialogue. And then I'm like, maybe I'll give them a want. Maybe somebody could want something in this 2 minute fucking bullshit. Right. Yeah. But I realized, like, if you start, you know, like a writer, start from sort of like the inside, with like, what's the theme we're exploring? You know, what are my characters' motivations? What are their wants? Getting out there. And then the dialogue is the last thing. Once you've got some of those other things, some of those other foundational pieces in place. And then all of a sudden the dialogue just felt like real, like, oh, these are the conversations that actual people would have. And once I started doing that, people read and like, oh, this is good.
Right.
And you wrote this?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, I could do this as a writer. I could potentially do this in addition to acting, which I was still doing at the time. And then it's kind of like, you know, but I was fucking around. I was writing, you know, like half hour comedy, dramas. Like I didn't really know what kind of writer I was. This was back like 2017, 2018. I didn't know what kind of writer I was. I was still kind of finding that out. So I was just, you know, whatever idea came to me, felt like I could write a script around. Yeah, I was writing it. And I was submitting to like the fellowships, you know, your NBC, ABC, Disney, all that shit. And it wasn't really sticking. It wasn't like I wasn't winning any competitions. It was kind of plus or minus hit or miss on how people you know, first of all, when you are an actor trying to write and you're trying to get other people to read your shit, oh my God, nobody wants to. They're like, oh, you're writing now?
Oh, well, look.
Yes. Send it to me. I'll read it. Yeah.
Try being a rapper. You think that's tough. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Disregard my song, but like, you want to read this script? Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, you know, I hear you though, but keep going.
Yeah. So, but anyway, so it was a little rough in those early days of kind of like honing in on.
What
on
kept you going?
Shit, I ain't have no success. I have no success on the acting side. Have no success.
Let's keep it real.
Yeah. Walmart Will Smith was not doing. I was like, well, they got to be doing like a Walmart version of Bad Boys, right? Will Smith ain't doing that movie.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, like.
So you weren't booking?
I mean, nah, not really.
Let me set the scene for the listener. Okay. Because Saeed did not prepare me for what our guest today looks like. Okay. It is like, we've had some beautiful, gorgeous writers come on this show. Stunning. But this, it's like looking at Rod, it's like looking directly into the sun. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm afraid my eyes are gonna get burned out. Like, it's just not right, you know?
You guys, you're hyping me up now. Or look, first of all, people are gonna ultimately go to my Instagram and realize that everything that you're saying is not entirely true. But I appreciate it. I feel like I got a lot to live up to. I'm gonna have to fucking turn my profile off to private. Just live in the glow.
Just put a Will Smith photo up there.
Bad Boys.
Bad Boys.
But yeah, no, so you weren't booking.
Yeah. I wasn't booking.
Which is interesting because Taylor Sheridan has a kind of similar story where he was working on that FX show called Shield. Was it Shield or was it? No. It was Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah.
And he was like, had a side sheriff role or some shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember in like season three, he was like, I'm not making enough money. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he was like, I got a baby coming.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He was like, and he asked for a raise and they're like, no raise. Matter of fact, we're killing you off. and then he ended up started like writing scripts and shit. Wow. He was like, I'm done. So it's interesting how, you know, for writers out there, or actors out there that you did do the pivot, which ended up working for you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's something that for all the actors, I mean, so I'll caveat this. So I wasn't booking, but the primary feedback that I was getting for the reason that it was not in fact that I looked like Walmart Will Smith.
Mm-hmm.
It was that the feedback was I'm too tall. I'm sitting down now.
Okay,
yeah. You can't quite tell.
He is tall.
Like, how tall are you? 6-something?
6'5".
Six and a half.
If you are standing next to him, you literally feel like you're about to be on the cover of like a romance novel. And he's gonna like hold you over the side of a cliff. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
He's that kind of tall.
Because most actors and actresses are
like
5'6".
Yeah. And it's a little bit of a problem, not so much for like a individual role, but it's like if I'm opposite somebody, because I'm not the star. Like, you know, and a lot of these actors, like they're already sort of. Like they're very, the ones that have a lot of pull in the industry, they're already very cautious about how they're being presented.
Yeah.
You know what I'm like? And so they're kind of like, they don't want to have one bad frame in some TV show that shows that they're actually 5'9" or 5'10", which is not short, but they want the illusion of them to be larger. Yeah. And if you're coming in there and you're just, you know, making everybody, even people who are 6'1", look smaller.
Apple box they can put Tom Cruise on for him to stand next to you.
Yeah, that'd be like 7 Apple boxes.
Yeah.
And it's probably hard to say your lines.
Yeah.
Standing on 7 Apple boxes. Yeah.
With the lifts too, and the shoes, you know?
Yeah.
Next thing you know, Tom Cruise is falling off all the Apple boxes and your ass is fired, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. I feel like that's they had to halt filming of one Mission Impossible because of exactly that scenario. Mm-hmm. They said he was jumping up from one building to the next, but really it was just a really bad Apple box topple.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They fired the person who lined up Apple boxes.
Right. So I mean, that was sort of a challenge, is that I have a very like my physical type is hard to cast too. Yeah. Anyways, enough of that.
What was that? So like, what was the script that changed everything for you though?
Yeah. So, you know, I guess as far as like the pivot comes, I mean, we were still talking like 2017, 2018. I was writing to fellowships, not getting in anywhere. Mm-hmm. The big moment of transition really came, and this is going to answer your question about the script that changed for me, really came during the pandemic, right? Yeah, when too. it was like, look, there's no casting going on. We're not shooting anything. Mm-hmm. I wasn't working because all the jobs were, you know, letting people go for a period of time. And so I was like, the one thing that I can do, and this is sort of the benefit of being a writer versus being an actor, is that you are kind of the master of your own destiny, right? If you want to just, if you don't need, you need so many other people if you want to act. Mm-hmm. I mean, even doing theater is a many, you know, dozens of people are involved. Even if you're, you know, it's not something that you can just up and do by yourself in your room during a global viral pandemic, right? Whereas writing, on the other hand, it's like, all right, well, you know, I've got 3 months and I can't leave the house. Yeah. Like this was that time when it was, they were like, don't even walk outside. Don't even look out, close the windows. Yeah. You know, be like fucking.
Yeah. I used to walk, I would wear like latex gloves. I would walk around the neighborhood wearing latex gloves and like a mask over my face. Yeah. And like the thing that's crazy is that it's like, you know, men were so starved for like any kind of like, you know, female interaction that it's like, I'd be walking around the neighborhood with latex gloves on. They would be like leaning out of the car, like yelling at me, and I would be like, "You don't want it, trust me." Yeah. You know,
it's not worth it under here.
Yeah,
no,
it's hilarious.
What you're imagining, it's not. I'm not it. You know.
Oh my god.
Sorry. So it's the pandemic.
Yeah, it's the pandemic, okay. And I was like, all right, look, here's what I'm gonna do. I got all this free time. I'm gonna write a script. Yeah. Right. Which actually, in a way, was a little bit of a rewriting of another script. I was like, that idea I explored in a previous, you know, iteration, I'm going to write that, but I'm going to write it better. If you read the two scripts, you would not recognize them at all. But I was like, the themes, the core idea of it, I'm just going to change it, bring it down to earth and do it a little different. And so I did that for like the first 3 months. And it was just kind of like, because I was operating off of a sort of like a similar story that had already sort of broken in my mind and outlined and fixed. It just came out of me pretty quick. To tell you about that script, it was a script called Vandals, and it was basically about this gentleman who he's a good looking dude. Right?
Why?
Good looking dude.
So embarrassed to good say that. Dude. Crazy.
He's a good looking dude.
Hot as hell.
And he gets diagnosed with cancer, and his whole world falls apart. And he loses his job, not because he has cancer, but just, you know, he's away from work, and his fiance ends up, you know, is like his primary caregiver, and she's taking care of him throughout this, and she's there from, and then he goes into remission, and it's like, instead of like doing the pivot of I go into remission, like I'm reborn, you know, a life reborn, he has the exact opposite effect. He goes into like a deep, dark depression, and his fiance is like, you know, I can't take care of you anymore. You know, you gotta start standing on your own 2 feet. She leaves him, and he just implodes, you know what I mean? Ends up burning his whole house down, like literally going to jail, you know, comes out, you know, a couple months later, and his parole officer, that is a real piece of shit. Great, funny, lovely character to write. Lots of fun. Comes up with this idea of like, of, well, basically doesn't come up with the idea. The idea is her. This is a very long
pitch.
Come on,
please.
This is a very long pitch for this script. Yeah.
We want to hear it.
Her idea is, I've totally forgotten the log line of this fucking story, so I got to just tell you the whole thing.
Tell it, please. Yeah.
Her idea is her ex-husband is about to get married.
Okay.
And she's like going to use this good-looking parolee to seduce his the future wife. To fuck him over.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the bulk of the script.
Okay.
That's pretty
much the bulk of the script. Oh, I love that.
And it's a feature?
No, this is a TV show drama.
Okay, cool.
A drama.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then another person, like a wedding photographer who witnesses all of this go down, kind of gets the idea of like, we, you know, the wedding photographer realizes what's happening is like, this could be a business. We could make money doing this. And that's sort of the story engine of like this trio of folks by the end of the pilot is like, how do we make money sabotaging people's weddings and other life events and
interesting.
All right, sorry for the long winded explanation. No,
but that is creative though. Like I can see nobody else is writing that.
No,
and that's you know. So when that does show up, does that kind of change people's? Do you start placing this stuff? Like what starts happening?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it wasn't that I was placing in competitions or anything like that. But what it was is the people that I sent it to.
Yeah,
like everybody was like, "Oh, that was fun."
Okay.
I'd never heard that particular type of feedback. People will come back and be like, I like this about it. You know, like your the dialogue in this scene is working or, you know, this, but it was like, I'd never had anybody be like, I read that. Like I sat down, I read that in like 45 minutes. It's like 55 pages and I read it in 45 minutes. It was just a fun read.
That's tight.
And then that was kind of like, to me, I was like, oh, okay. I might have something with that. And that this we're still in the pandemic, right? Because as we all know, that shit went on longer than 3 months.
Oh, it didn't last.
It went on a while. But then towards the end of that same year, like this was coming up on, I want to say, because I don't. By the time I finished that script, it was already past sort of the submission deadlines. But towards the end of the year, I was like, all right, we're coming up on fuck. I don't even know what year it was. 2021.
Something like that.
Yeah,
I was like, I'm applying to every fellowship that crop. Like, I'm not. Same I'm still not doing anything. I'm still, you know, sitting around the house. We're still all locked up, and who knows how long this is gonna be. But every fellowship that comes up, I got no excuse. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna bang out a. Because this was back when you still needed a
spec.
Yeah. I'm gonna bang out a spec, and it'll be like sort of a companion script to live alongside this because I need two scripts to submit to all these competitions.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one that I ended up submitting to was this one by the name of. You might know it, site called Mentorship Matters.
Yeah.
The first one, it was the submission deadline was, I think, or no, they opened it up like February 1 of 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And it was open until 2028. And I'm like, I always wait until the last day. Like, I'm always one of those.
Oh, you did a last dayer?
No. But I was like, because I got my scripts ready, I'm going to be
early.
I'm going to be legit the first script. Like, that shit opens at 12:01. PM on fucking February 1st, and I'm gonna submit at 12:02.
Like, love it.
And so I did that. I don't know if that. Hey, listen, people.
We gotta ask Rael.
I'm not sure.
Was Roz the first one?
Yeah, I'm not sure that makes any impact whatsoever. But I was like, I'm just gonna flip it up to do something different, right? And as you know, and as a result, I ended up landing in that mentorship program, ended up meeting my mentor, sort of interviewing my mentor, and then getting into the program in, what was that? That was April of that same year. And again, so that was the script that changed it for me and sort of gave me the confidence in my writing to sort of branch out and pursue some of the things because let me just preface this. When I wrote that script, it was called Vandals. I was really looking to write something that had a very broad appeal, which was kind of my approach, which is not necessarily, you know, what they might, what's the word here? Recommend to you, right? Cause everybody wants you to have your own individual voice. Mm-hmm. Right. But I was trying to write something very broad so that I could use it for a lot of different competitions. But what I realized in doing that is that not that my voice is very broad, but my voice was still like, you can't change your voice. Mm-hmm. Like broad, like the subject matter, the interest of the story was broad, but my voice was still coming through pretty clear. And so it helped me kind of find again, the type of writer that I am. But leaving that script behind, I was like, I want to start focusing myself towards like the subject matter, the stories, the type of shows that I would like to write on, and the type of content that I would like to produce and the type of things that I'm most interested in. And that primarily lives in the world of sci-fi and genre.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, I mean, just kind of as a matter of course, the mentor that I was paired up with, a gentleman by the name of Graham Rowland, shout out to my brother, Graham. He cut his teeth early in his career working on Lost, right? You know, he was in the J.J. Abrams camp. He was a writer on Fringe, The Returned. There's another one in there, Almost Human. He's done a lot. I mean, he's had an incredible career, but he has a very strong sense for good sci-fi, you know, strong, grounded sci-fi. And I was like, this is a great opportunity for me to kind of flex in the sci-fi world, because I'd always feared writing sci-fi, because when you know, it's one thing when you're like, I used to be an actor, now I'm a writer, and guess what I write, folks? Sci-fi. like people are like, not trying to read that. But I was like, well, let me use this opportunity, because I have somebody who has, you know, very, very strong,
yeah,
like just understands the taste of what is good sci-fi. So let me use this opportunity to hone in on something that's not going to be too crazy outlandish. It's, you know, not something that I think would be sort of like a palatable sci-fi experience, and also an opportunity to demonstrate my voice in that genre. And ended up writing a script, which I think does exactly that. This was through the program that we were in, Mentorship Matters. Though I didn't realize it at the time, my mentor was also working on the development of another show that was coming up through the Apple TV system, which had very, very strong sci-fi elements to it. But he talked a little bit about it, but he didn't really tell me anything. Like, he told me that he's like, oh, some of the things that these are some of the ideas or things that we're exploring on the show that I'm currently developing. And I was like, oh, cool. That kind of reminds me a little bit of some of the things that I was writing in my script. This was during the program. And we go through the whole process. I ended up finishing the script. It was like late August, which was early for the program. They gave you a year, but, you know, there was, just because of scheduling concerns, we ended up doing a lot over the course of the summer. So I finished the script in August, and I like sent my mentor like my final draft on, it was like early September, and he was like, oh, cool, thanks. You mind if I, you know, share this with some folks? And I was like, oh, cool, yeah, because he had talked about introducing me to his manager. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, certainly, send it along. And so I get a phone call like 2 days later, and it's and it's like some, I'm at the gym, and it's like, so I just get the message.
Of course you are.
It's like a message. It's like a message.
I'm making a creatine powder shake, and this call comes in.
Yeah. I'm crushing fucking weight.
I'm bench pressing right now. What do you want?
No, I missed the call, so it was a message, and I answered, and somebody on the their car phone with the windows down. It's like, hey, brah, read script, love it. Call me back.
and you know, this is a manager speak, of course.
Yeah. And so I was like, oh, let me call this person back. And so I call him back, and it ended up being an executive, one of the executives.
Oh shit! It wasn't even a manager.
Yeah, it wasn't a manager.
Holy shit!
And they're like, read your script, love it. It feels like it lives inside the world of the show that we're developing. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what show? And he was,
man, hold on, bro.
Yeah.
Hold on. First off, wait. What's crazy about this whole situation is you get in the Mentorship Matters program. One thing that's dope about this program is they align you with a mentor who's a showrunner, which is like crazy.
Yeah.
They align me with Aaron Thomas, who created SWAT. They aligned you with Graham.
Graham Rowland, yeah.
Right. And so what's smart that you did, which I think some writers fuck up, is like you wrote something that was in his wheelhouse.
Because
you're actually writing a script with him, so you're like getting notes. Mm. So it's like, even when I was with Aaron, I wrote, because he wrote on Friday Night Lights. So the thing I wrote was like Friday Night Light-ish. You know what I'm saying?
So I'm like,
I might as well get notes from him. And it was an hour long. And so what I'm saying is that was a super smart fucking choice.
Yeah.
And when you did that, little do you know, like, you get to benefit from that because he's working on the Apple show that's a crazy story.
Mm-hmm. So this executive calls me and tells me, he's like, have you read the pilot? And I'm like, I do not know what you're talking about. What pilot?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, okay, but you read the book, right? And I'm like,
what book?
Well, I'm like, yeah, what book?
Where are we going with this? I got creatine to get to.
So this is like exactly the type of your first conversation with a production executive. This is exactly how you want it to go. You know nothing about the opportunity or anything like that. But anyways, he was super gracious. He understood. There was a lot going on. It was a little bit of a mixed signal getting in there. And he's like, well, I'll send you the pilot, and you can, you know, I'll send you a copy of the book. And I was like, oh, don't even sweat it. I'll get the book. And they sent me the pilot. And I'm reading it, and I'm realizing in this moment, right, because the pilot was, this is a show, again, the show that was being developed by my mentor, Graham Rowland. When I'm reading the pilot, I'm realizing, like, a lot of the elements and themes that I was developing in my script, they're, like, geared specifically to live in, again, live inside of the world of this show that's in development. And I'm starting to think, you know, back on it, and I'm like, like, you're like, this was a great choice, right? A great choice. But I'm like, was it even a choice, or was I just like
was it the Matrix?
Yeah.
Is this really steak?
Yeah. I mean, because so much of it, when you're working with your mentors, they're influencing you in the way that is to put you in a position to be successful. And I'm like, you know what? I'm thinking back on it, and I'm like, a lot of, like, these great ideas that I had, it was subtly under the influence of my mentor, Graham Rowland. So he was just putting me in a position. Yeah. To be successful. And so then by the time it came to staff up, my script was in great shape to be presented as a potential staff writer for the show. Mm. And the funny thing was, like, we talked about the timing of it. You have a year to write this script. Mm-hmm. I finished my script, like, the day before, I believe, the day before my mentor needed to submit who potential samples for staff writer. Like, they were literally staffing the next week.
Wow.
And so the timing couldn't have been any better.
Yeah.
Finished the script, sent it in. The rest was kind of history. Ended up getting staffed on the show. We started writing in, like, at a time which I will not describe on this podcast, but shortly after. That was my very political answer on when we began, but it's been a process for sure.
The show is Neuromancer, right?
Yeah. Okay, the show is Neuromancer, based on the book from William Gibson, someone who's largely credited with being sort of like a grandfather of the world of cyberpunk, or even, you know, one of the most fundamental creators of that world. I believe he coined the term cyberspace. The book came out in 1984. It also came out in that same year was Blade Runner. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And those two pieces are sort of largely credited with the way in which we think about cyberpunk today.
Wow.
I mean, shoot, it's largely, you know, I didn't say this, other people have said, it's largely, the Matrix is largely credited as being somewhat derived from the world of Neuromancer. Mm. Another movie you guys remember, another Keanu Reeves movie, Johnny Mnemonic.
Yeah.
That's a direct character pulled from the world of the book of Neuromancer. Yeah, wow. Yeah. I mean, and you watch all, there's so much other pop culture movies that have gone on to have major success. From the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, even to today, you can when you've read Neuromancer, you can feel the influences of, you can see the pieces of the world, because it's such an expansive show. It covers so many different elements of futuristic, cyberpunk, you know, science fiction. Mm-hmm. Everything from, you know, like, brain computer interfaces to cloning to fucking, you know. You know, you name it. It's all kind of packed into this sort of groundbreaking science fiction book. Mm. And so a lot of people have come along and pulled a small piece of this world, mm-hmm. and been like, let's explore this in a feature film. Let's explore this piece in a TV series. But we got lucky enough to where we got the property at the right time in the market to where, we had the chance to sort of explore it over the course of 10 episodes.
Wow. I've got a question now.
No, go ahead.
Okay. In between you writing these skits at the Howard Fine Studio to writing the version of Vandals that has gotten you staffed on Neuromancer.
Yeah.
Are you just self-taught throughout that process, or did you take any kind of writing classes? Like, how did you get better and better?
Well, I mean, it's funny that you mentioned the Howard Fine Acting Studio, because it's a theater-based acting studio. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that their approach is less in the traditional vein of like TV and film acting studios, which you have a lot of here in LA, which rely very heavily on the process of
not necessarily a cold read, but you're not doing as much preparation. Whereas right. in theater, it's very preparation intensive. Mm-hmm. You spend a lot of time analyzing the work. The studio that I was at, Howard Fine, they you only, for the most part, you only present plays.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very dialogue focused evaluation. And then of course you're bringing the work to class. You're doing all the process of setting the scene.
Mm-hmm.
The level of work involved to put up work in that particular studio, super intense. But the benefit of it is in spending all of that time in dissecting these great playwrights, in a way, it's teaching you how to identify great writing. It's teaching you how to identify wants. It's teaching you how to identify motivation. It's teaching you how to identify themes, kind of like I was describing to you guys before.
Mm-hmm.
I was going in a very superficial level to find those layer. What, you know, in the studio they have a phrasing. What's the thing? I've said this before, I promise you. What's the thing behind the thing behind the thing? Like, you're right. continually digging to uh-huh. you know, to get to yeah. that to that layer. Next level.
Yeah,
and that is, to me, sort of the foundations of great writing, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're learning, there's a reason why there's so many fantastic writers now. You know, they used to be actors, you know, mm-hmm. of a certain level. It's like, if you spend enough time breaking down great work, you're going to learn the things that you're responding to as an actor. And then when you turn around and you write those things, you're trying to generate the same moments for any actor that will ultimately portray it. So that was kind of like my early
school
education to the craft of writing, mm-hmm. was through that acting. And then again, the second level was getting on, listening to the writer's panel episodes, mm-hmm. and some other writing podcasts as well, just to kind of, again, find the sort of the nuance of specific around television writing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because writing plays is great for writing dialogue, but it doesn't really teach you sort of like most of the plays that we were reading, they had very little prose, little if any stage direction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just words on a page, which is great for getting a sense for the rhythm of writing dialogue, but it's not gonna help you if you're writing a TV script, which is, like I said, that was sort of filled in by the podcast that I was listening to.
Mm.
Do you have any advice for upcoming screenwriters as far as being staffed in the first room? Because that was your first room, right?
Yeah. I mean, as far as being staffed, I mean, it's, you know, like, my experience is so specific that it's kind of hard to translate. I'd say the best thing to do is, if there's like is try and get in, you know, if you are able, try and, like, let me slow this on down and break it down a little differently here. In the same way that our friend Saeed is dating with intention.
Oh, he's making a parallel.
Writers of the world, you should write with intention. And all of that is to say is that if there, it's very easy to sort of say, I want to be a writer, I'm just going to write. You know, you're trying to anticipate what the market wants. But the reality is, you need to sit down and think to yourself, what's the story you want to tell?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And what do you enjoy watching? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and focus on that, write with intention, and the stories are going to come. I mean, you really can only get better through the practice of time,
mm-hmm.
you know, reading scripts, watching movies, watching TV. Do that, and ultimately the script that you come out is gonna, your voice is gonna just come out through the process of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first thing. The second thing is then try and utilize these avenues of mentorships, fellowships, mm-hmm. you know, reach out to your networks. I mean, because it's just, I don't know a lot of people who are, particularly outside of LA, I don't know a lot of people who are finding staffing opportunities from across the country. Right. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, the best way to get staffed on if you're not living in LA and you're not working your way up from some, you know, like an assistantship to mm-hmm. a script coordinator or what have you, if you're not working up that internal ladder that only exists really here in LA and to a small degree in New York, the best thing you can do is just write a strong script and really work on improving your voice. Mm-hmm. I mean, so that would be my best advice is. this sounds pretty generic, but it's like become a great writer. That's not really, you know, it's hard to say, but it's like there's, I don't know that I know any surefire way to get staffed. Even all of these things, you can get into a fellowship and we've all
still seen not great get writers. Staffed.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Still not get staffed. It's still a tricky uphill battle. But we've discussed this. How many times have we living in LA, you'll meet a lot of professional writers who don't really write. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They've been staffed before and they don't understand why they're not getting their next staffing opportunity because they're using a sample that they wrote mm-hmm. 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so the growth of them that is taking place as a writer, it only occurred in the room, but they don't really have a work product outside mm-hmm. of these produced scripts on a show that they were on, which is not going to help you as much as I had this original idea mm-hmm. that I've been working on, you know, that is speaking to the voice and the talent level that I possess at this current moment. Mm-hmm. And I think that's sort of the benefit of younger writers who have not yet been staffed is that you're hungrier, you're constantly generating material. You're going to be a little bit better positioned because the scripts that you're writing are speaking to your voice and who you are as a writer now, as opposed to some of the other folks who have, you know, samples that are speaking to the writer they were.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned when you started applying to fellowships that you wrote a TV spec.
Yeah.
What show did you spec?
Oh, shit. I wrote a spec of, I mean, this was between season one and season two, I believe. Season one and season two of You.
Oh,
I wrote one. No, I didn't. No. But go ahead. That's tight, though.
Oh.
Yeah.
Unexpected. Like, I wouldn't expect unexpected. That.
I fucked with that show, though.
Yeah.
Shout out
yeah.
Sarah Gamble. But I like that show.
Well, I mean, the script that I wrote, the Vandals, the one about the wedding crasher folks, mm-hmm. its tone was it had sort of that a similar sort of lightness and mm-hmm. darkness, sort of that light and dark balance mm-hmm. that existed in You at the time. If I recall, the You spec was basically at the end of season one. Spoiler alert: if you haven't watched fucking first season,
I should be fucking and watch season.
Yeah,
one.
Yeah. But, it's they already did like season four.
Yeah. Joe has framed like the woman that he has murdered. Mm-hmm. He's framed her therapist with the murder of it.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the spec script that I wrote was. This idea that because Joe had also taken sessions with the therapist. And so I was like, well, let me exploit that piece that took place in season one, which is never addressed in season two, which mm-hmm. is the therapist has like recordings of all these sessions. And so the whole idea was that Joe was like, well, if somebody, you know, digs deeper into this, they might find recordings of me, video and audio recordings that are tying me to this person, blah, 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 fill in the blank. But the therapist is in jail. And so my spec basically is like Joe has to seduce the therapist's ex-wife.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a young son. And mm-hmm. he has to kind of like work his way into this family to get access to the personal recordings that are stored on the family computer.
Love it.
And in doing so, he's like, you know, using his little version of psychological... I don't even know.
Warfare, yeah.
Yeah. Just imagine the most fucked up version of that. That was pretty much what it was about. But it was just kind of like trying to, you know, again, writing a spec that the sort of advice for spec writers is finding the timing of it, you know, trying to make sure that it's something that lives in between the last episode and the premiere of whatever the next episode is going to be. But also kind of you can really milk the prior season to kind of like try and find something that is not really addressed. You know what I mean? Like try and find something because then you're just maintaining the same characters. You're pulling them into different scenarios. You can already, you know, you can kind of speak in their voices. And so it's going to take off some of that heavy lifting of generating whole new characters out of thin air. But yeah, that was the spec I wrote. It never got used. Never got used.
Oh
yeah.
Oh, you don't send it out at all.
I don't send that one out. No, I don't send it out. Okay. And I didn't use it for any fellowships because, well, this was that year when they were like, we don't need specs anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
Give us two originals. Yeah. And so luckily I had another original. So I never ended up sending that U spec to anybody. But yeah, it existed.
What was a day like in the Neuromancer room and how did you find... Because when I was in the room, it was like at first, I think the first week I was kind of quiet.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, just like peeping the politics and how people pitched, and then I slowly figured out my style like second or third week. How was it for you?
As far as I would say it was a pretty similar experience to that. You know what I mean? Like it was, honestly, being in the room for the first time, like you guys know, you're just so excited to be there. You want to contribute.
Yeah.
You want to prove to everybody that you deserve to be there, that you're smart enough and you have good ideas. And my advice to all the young writers who just got staffed is bottle that shit.
As fast as possible.
Huh? Yeah. Bottle it. I mean, and that doesn't mean don't let it out. I mean, but in doses, small doses, right? Yeah. You know, and like it's sort of unavoidable that you're going to feel like you're kind of under a microscope and everybody's looking at you like, why did we hire this guy? Mm-hmm. Why is he here? Like, you know what I mean? Like, nobody's fucking thinking that. Like, they're all, in fact, they're probably all thinking the same thing about themselves. Like, I got to fucking come up with some good pitches and prove why I belong to be here. Right. They're not thinking about you. Mm-hmm. But you're still going to feel like you have to prove why you're there. But it's like my previous mentor, who I'm going to refer to as Graham, I realize I've been calling him Graham Roland this whole podcast, but I just call him Graham. Nobody calls him Graham Roland except for me. So Graham, because he was previously my mentor and then he became my showrunner, we had a better relationship. Mm-hmm. And he was like, you know, basically he was like, look, spend the first couple weeks just observing.
Right.
Like that's your job, uh-huh, is to listen. Right.
Yeah.
And really didn't give any more guidance to that. Like, that's your job. Observe and listen. And that, I think, gave me a little bit more space and freedom to really kind of sit in the quiet and just watch these great storytellers formulate ideas and, you know, how you kind of, like you said, like their pitching style. And then so it'll be like, well, what am I responding to? Mm-hmm. I mean, and even like one of the great things about being in the room is that you kind of learn people's ways of navigating smartly navigating communication. Mm-hmm. Trying to find ways to sort of tease out an idea without being antagonistic. Mm-hmm. How do we work? Not because ideas shouldn't be shot down, but you need to kind of work them, mm-hmm, at times to find out what is the best version of that idea. Mm-hmm. And how do we navigate this to a landing spot that's going to be fulfilling to readers, watchers, what have you. And that, I believe, is kind of like the art form of truly great TV writers. And I was luckily I was in a room with a bunch of them. I mean, so watching them, I was just picking up things. But yeah, that sort of was the nature, basically observational, like you were saying, trying to figure out how I'm going to get my ideas out for the, mm-hmm, first 2 to 3 weeks. And then even beyond that, beyond that time, you start to get a sense for the idea of the time scale of the room. And what I mean by that is like, how much time do we have to get through this episode, or how much time can we spend, you know, on this particular point? Like, you don't want to derail the room is kind of the thing. We don't want to, like, I don't want to bring something up that's going to send us down a rabbit hole for 15 minutes for some element that we're ultimately not going to, like, we're going to cut this from the episode altogether.
Yeah. Right?
And so that was so you have to kind of sort of track where the momentum is of, mm-hmm, the ideas, right? Where is the ultimate, not just the different versions that are going forward, but like, where is the idea that's gaining the most momentum, the most traction, and how can I best to support that idea? Mm-hmm. That was kind of like the next phase of it. And then once I felt like I found the momentum of the idea, how do I, you know, again, now back to what's my pitching style to showcase this particular piece of whatever I think is going to elevate this idea or improve it or change it or what have you. Another thing that was sort of like consistently on my mind, which was very tricky for me to do as a staff writer, which is unique to being a staff writer, is that you're kind of in charge of the board. And this was all over Zoom. Mm. And so you have to really learn how to track because nobody's sitting around and being like, okay, this person does this thing, I like that. Nobody's like looking at me like, okay, right, you get that, put a card up because that's the idea we're going with. Yeah, nobody's telling you that. You just have to kind of learn to figure that out. You know what I mean? Like, and you can only really catch that through observation and just kind of seeing, like, when is the group settled on an idea? Mm-hmm. Because it's moving fast, and there's mm-hmm. a lot of ideas and themes. And I already told you, like, Neuromancer is full of so much. It's such a rich world. You have to really kind of find out what's winning, what won, what do we need a card for? Because if you put, like, when I first started, I was just putting up cards for everything, and I'm like, I'll sort this out as it feels like we've had, you know, we've solidified these ideas. But then that quickly turns into just card soup, where, you know, and nobody understands the board except for me. And I'm like, no. Right. Don't look at those cards below this level. Right. Only ignore, look at cards in rows. Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 yeah. episodes. Like, it was just too much. But yeah, so I spent a couple of weeks of just kind of like figuring out how to run a board virtually. Sorry. Yeah, yeah. That was a little tricky. Did you ever have to run the board when you were?
Nope.
You fucking lucked out. You lucked out, brother.
Nope. Real quick before we get to our last question, you don't have to say the pitch, but do you remember the first pitch that you hit?
Wow.
I do. But
wow. Shit, this was an unspecified amount of time ago that I will not be mentioning on this.
Well, you don't have to say the time, yeah, but do you remember the first one?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The first pitch that I landed, it was probably something medical related.
Tight.
Like I got a background in medicine, and so like, that was like my comfort zone originally. It was like medicine and technology. Yeah, mm-hmm. those were the two fields that I worked in prior to you know, pursuing acting and coming ultimately to screenwriting. And so that was like where I lived. It was like somebody would say something medical, I'd be like, oh, let me talk about this.
That's tight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's like, and again, it was like in the script that I wrote in the Mentorship Matters program, those were the heavy elements that were cross-talking to the show. Neuromancer was the medicine and the technology that was related to the script that I had written. And so I felt like that was one of the reasons that had got me into the room.
100%
was the
knowledge. Experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I felt like whenever I was adding in those areas, there was no, like, I there was no thought that I was saying anything that was like sort of like repeating other people's ideas. Right. It felt very distinct to me. Like, I was living in that world. And I just felt comfortable there. So that was, I can't say exactly what it was, but it was
probably that.
Yeah, yeah. It was probably something in that vein. But it's like, to your point, like, it's like, if you can, if it's at all possible, if you get staffed and you have access to the showrunner, you can ask them and say, what was it about my script that really stood out to you?
That's a good one.
When you, in the hiring process, like, why did you bring me on board? If you know that going in, I think that's a huge advantage, because it may not necessarily be what you think it is. But in this case, I was pretty confident in those areas. And so that allowed me the sort of the courage to speak up on those matters and put those ideas forward.
Shout out to Devon Shepherd, who staffed me on Flatbush, but he told me, he's like, motherfucker, you in here for jokes.
Hey,
like, God damn, that's it. Like, I was like, thinking, like, I got this amazing dialogue. And see, like, motherfucker, yeah. You here for jokes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Speaking of not thinking you were there for that, because I'm like, I'm not funny. But Mel's funny. On the other hand, Mel, yeah. Do you want to go into the last question?
Oh, you're gonna let me close?
Oh yes.
Oh, unbelievable! Wow.
What a gift.
So generous.
You know this, Steve. You listen to all the episodes.
So hey, yeah, yeah.
Raw.
Yeah, give it to me.
As we conclude our episode today, we'd love to ask you something we ask everyone who comes on our podcast, and that is, can you please tell us three things that you are watching, reading, and listening to that you're absolutely loving?
All right. I'm watching, reading, and listening to.
Correct.
Yeah. You know what? I'm not panicking right now.
Okay.
But I should have prepared a response for this. I'm gonna straight off the cuff. What am I watching? Oh God, I'm actually loath to tell you what I'm actually watching.
No, do it. Please let us know. Tell us.
Yeah. No. I'm
Love is Blind. Kayla's over here on Love is Blind.
I've got one serious answer and one not so serious
Let's
answer.
Go.
I'm gonna go with the not so serious answer first. What I'm watching is a show called Mediterranean Life.
Never heard of it.
Yeah. It's like a travel show where like Americans go to the Mediterranean to buy like their dream home.
Okay.
And it's crazy because they're living like on the Mediterranean in like a 5-bedroom house with a pool and a fucking moat Okay. And, and there's a dragon that lives in a cave down low. It's like it's on Hulu. It's on Hulu. Yeah. But they'll they'll get these fucking crazy houses, and they're like, you know, it's like, okay, the rent on this house is $2,000 a month. And I fucking fall out of my chair every time. Every time I'm like, what the fuck am I doing?
Yeah.
Like, why am I? Why am I living here? Yeah. So yeah. So that's and it's just a great show to have on in the background. It's because I was just working on a script. I'll say that.
Okay.
So I was recently working on a script, and it's a great thing to kind of have on in the background when I'm focusing on my writing, because it's not like influencing me culturally or it's not having an impact on what I'm writing, but it is something to be on there, and it is something that, you know, I find enjoyment every time I look up from my script. And then what am I watching? You know, shit. I'm watching fucking Shogun.
All right. I'm starting it tonight.
I'm People are loving Shogun.
Yeah. Starting it tonight. It. 25 Violent. Million an episode.
Yeah. So. Reportedly. Yeah, I love it. It's just, it's so visually rich.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Like, it just feels like you watch it and it just feels you're different. In that world. Yeah. The character, like I've only seen the first two episodes, so the characters are just starting to take shape in my mind. It was kind of like sort of like the same thing with Game of Thrones when you're watching it. Like the first two episodes, you kind of understand who the folks you're watching are, but you don't quite know them entirely. But I can feel it kind of moving in that direction. So I'm watching Shogun. Highly recommend.
What are you reading?
Yeah, I'm reading more sci-fi. I'm reading more sci-fi like novels.
Okay.
So I'm reading a book called Titanium Noir.
Okay.
Oh.
Which is about, I think the basic premise of it is that in a future world, there is this substance that you take that allows you to extend your life, to live longer.
Mm-hmm.
But as a sort of like a side effect of that, you also grow as you age. So it's sort of like
at least,
just in general size, like you just continue to grow. So the longer you're taking this substance, or the more you take of it, the greater the larger you become. And it becomes sort of like a statement of wealth. Your size is like how wealthy you are, how long you've lived, how big you get, that something along those ideas.
Rod's been taking the drunk.
Yeah, exactly.
Until Ozempic.
Exactly. It's nonfiction actually. It's a super cool fucking sci-fi noir. The dialogue and like just the way the author crafts it. I'm spacing on the author's name, otherwise I would say it now, but it's a
we'll figure it out.
Yeah, he's just a really great writer, noir storyteller, in a sci-fi world, which is where I like to envision myself as a writer.
What are you listening to?
Yeah. What am I listening to? Mostly two writers talking shit.
That's what I'm talking
about. Perfect answer. Yeah. Perfect answer.
10 out of 10. No, you guys are quickly becoming like sort of like the this is how you guys know where you stand is because I'll listen to Up First, the NPR podcast, like 15 minutes of news early in the morning. Yeah. And then the next one that always comes up is if you guys have a new episode, you're always number two, right behind it.
On autoplay.
Okay.
Autoplay.
That's what I'm talking about.
And then beyond that, I was listening to, you know, just musically listen to a lot of Burna Boy. Late to the game on Burna Boy.
Burna Boy's dope.
Fallen in love with, you know, I think he's African or
it's but like he's got like that Caribbean sort of, drum kind of vibe to Afrobeat.
super dope. That's how I'm repeat on my playlist. But yeah, those are my answers.
Where can they find you?
Yeah,
Twitter.
I mean,
X?
Not on X. I was part of the Exodus.
Okay.
Yeah. Has anybody used that pun yet?
No, but no. You got it. The Exodus.
Yeah. I was part of the Exodus way back in the day. So I'm no longer affiliated with that former bird app for a multitude of reasons.
Yeah.
But you can find me on Instagram.
There you go.
You can, and Threads. Same. It's the same at. It's just Raw Johnson. That's R-A-H Johnson on Instagram and Threads. Maybe you can't find me on Instagram. I might make my profile private so you can't see my
after this. After this, get these DMs.
Just be, I'll take all the pics of me down and just be food pics.
Just put Will Smith up there.
It'll be I'm gonna start a Raw Johnson Instagram.
Start like underscore Rod, start a new one and copy all his photos.
No, Rod Johnson underscore Brazil.
Yeah, Brazil. Oh man. All right, Mel, another great episode.
Another amazing episode, Saeed.
Yes. Look, if you hear our podcast, go share, comment.
Rate us 5 stars.
I saw we were like 4.8.
That's not acceptable.
I think that was actually me. I give you guys 1 star.
Oh, man. You're the one who did it backwards.
I can take it back. I thought it was the other way.
Opposite. You thought one was good? All right.
Look, we got to bring it up to a 5.
Don't make that mistake. No. Hey, out there, if you're listening, you haven't voted, we want to get up to a 5. Mm. So we're at 4.8. Mel doesn't like that. No. So please, hit 5s. Thank you. Two writers.
Talking shit.
Bye. Bye.
Two Writers Talking Shit is an original podcast created by Melanie Mars and Saeed Crumpley. Our producer is Kayla Guess. Our audio engineer is T. Kelly.
Listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you damn well please. All we ask is that you subscribe, rate us 5 stars, and give us a glowing review.
If you're not going to give us 5 stars or any glowing reviews, then why even log on? Save your rants for an open mic.
If you have any questions for us, and I do mean any, you can email us at twowriterstalkingshit@gmail.com. That's the number 2, and then writerstalkingshit@gmail.com.
See you next episode.
Bye.